bring the assistance to families that now need help providing meals to themselves more than ever in this economy. And you guys do great work. And so please make any remarks you would like.
Yeah, well, good morning, Mayor Adams and commissioners. On behalf of Oregon Food Bank, we want to thank the City of Portland for this very generous grant. It will be used to purchase food as we're facing one of the most challenging years we've ever had, with food donations decreasing, food prices going up, cash donations decreasing, and more people seeking emergency food assistance. As you said, Commissioner Leonard, one in five people in Oregon face hunger. And as you said, Commissioner Fish, earlier, last year was the first year that the Oregon Food Bank and its network throughout the state of Oregon delivered enough food to fill 1.2 million emergency food boxes. It's really stellar. One in five people in Oregon face hunger, and it's a problem that we feel needs to be addressed. It's a priority. Unemployment is an issue that continues to drive hunger and the need for people to seek emergency food more than the four times a year that they typically do. You'll be pleased to know that with the $100,000 contributed by the city, we'll be able to purchase between 300,000 and 400,000 pounds of food, because we purchase in bulk and we get extremely good prices, and that'll be a variety of shelf-stable foods like oats, beans, rice, as well as fresh produce, which is more in demand and goes to the healthy eating needs of even hungry people. So, again, thank you very much.
Any other council discussion?
Wait, I was just curious. You mentioned food donations are down. Is that food donations that come from grocery stores and things like that?
From all sources. So we get about 50% of our food from the food industry, which includes retailers, farmers, manufacturers, packagers, and they're all being hit by the bad economy as well. So they are seeking secondary and tertiary markets to sell their product, whereas it used to be that all mislabeled food would come to the food bank or local food pantry. Now we're seeing those retailers and manufacturers seek out markets to sell that food, possibly to discount stores, possibly overseas, but it has had an impact, a negative impact on us. We've seen food donations go down 12% just among that group since last year, since the prior year, and we're expecting that some of our food that we get through Feeding America, the National Food Bank affiliate, as well as USDA food will also go down just because of the economic impact. And food prices, meanwhile, are going up 4 to 5%.
So I realize this may be a difficult question to answer, but does the food bank have any kind of a programs that specifically target children?
I mean, yes, we have a Childhood Hunger Core. It's a partnership with Feeding America where we look at how we can address childhood hunger. We've piloted five school-based food pantries to see how well that has worked. And the pilot just ended. We're summarizing all the data. But basically, it was very successful. It's a centralized location where children go, where their parents go to pick them up. There's less opportunity to be stigmatized by going to a pantry because you're already at the school. And it's a way also for the burden of the food being brought home not to be put on the child but on the family. We've piloted backpack programs as well, where a child is given a backpack full of food on a Friday to take home to the family. But the school pantry is working much better. We're going to be looking to determine whether or not we're going to do that permanently and then look for funding for that.
I'd be interested if it's something you want to share with me to see the results of that pilot.
Oh, absolutely. We'll definitely do that. Yeah, because a third of the people who eat out of an emergency food box every month are children, and that affects education and employment.
And my understanding is that donating money to the food bank, you can leverage, you can buy much more with a dollar than I could buy if I went to the grocery store. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. We pay approximately, on average, 51 cents for a pound of food, 12 cents for a pound of produce. So we can definitely leverage it. Plus, the cash donations that we receive help us support our transportation department, which delivers the food throughout the state and even into Clark County, Washington.
So if somebody's watching at home and cares about this challenge that a lot of Oregonians are facing, they don't have to go to the store and figure out how to get it to the food bank with their donation. The best thing to do would be to go online and give you money?
Mm-hmm. You can go to our website, oregonfoodbank.org, send in a check, or donate directly to a local pantry. Thank you.
Does anyone else wish to comment? Anyone wish to testify? Carla, can you please call the vote?
Leonard?
Well, I think this is the seventh year I've brought a measure forward for the food bank. And
thank you.
And it's been my pleasure. And notwithstanding our economic challenges, this next year I will be bringing forward another measure. And the reason really is for the articulate answers you gave, how you use the money. I don't, in my view, think that there's much more fundamentally that a government's responsible for than to make sure that its citizens are fed. And I have always been impressed with your work, how far you stretch a dollar to help some of the neediest people in our community, and I'm very pleased to support you and to vote aye.
Fritz?
Thank you to the staff and volunteers of the Oregon Food Bank, and thank you, Commissioner Leonard, for bringing this forward. I also thank former Commissioner Mike Lindberg, who is a tireless advocate and always visits us to make sure that we do understand that the need that, as you say, has been growing. So there's a lot of good work that's being done, and it's wonderful that compassionate Oregonians care about each other and are helping each other through this horrible crisis. Aye.
Fish?
What Randy didn't mention was that he'll propose for the next budget cycle funding, but he will not be on the council to see it carried through. So I will be the first to make a public commitment that I will support whatever he puts in the budget for the cycle, that he will not be actually voting on the final budget, but to make sure that we continue the momentum which he started and that we enjoy at the 8th, 9th, and 10th year of supporting your good work. And thank you, Randy, for being a champion.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, one cycle off, I will, in fact, be able to vote in this next cycle. And
darn.
So I'm counting on your second vote.
Darn.
It'll be the next
thank
one
you,
after
invite.
That that I will I take you up
on
that.
I got caught up. I got prematurely caught up in the emotion of his imminent departure.
Me leaving, yeah.
The spirit stands that I will support my friend in this endeavor. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.
Did you vote? Aye.
Yeah. Saltzman?
Well, thank you, Commissioner Leonard. This is definitely a worthwhile investment of city dollars. Aye.
Adams?
Thanks to Commissioner Leonard. Thanks to the food bank. I enjoyed your harvest dinner the other night. That was great.
Great. Thank you for being there.
Need you now more than ever. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, item number 1116?
Allow a commissioner in charge to enter into an employment agreement with a bureau director.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Mayor, there's no particular reason this should be an emergency ordinance, so I'd move to remove the emergency clause.
Second.
Been moved and seconded to remove the emergency clause. Is there any discussion on council? Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Emergency is a move. Remove. Commissioner Fish.
We have Yvonne Deckard and Anna Canwood here to walk us through the proposed ordinance. Yvonne, you want to take it?
Yes, for the record, my name is Yvonne Decker, and I'm the director for the Bureau of Human Resources. I'm just going to start off before I turn this over to Anna Canwood to walk you through the ordinance, just to kind of give you a little background about how we got here. over the last several recruitments for bureau directors, we have been, as we've done cold calls to potential candidates, we've had, you know, candidates that have elected not to apply for these positions, both locally, regionally, and nationally, because of a lack of a employment agreement. It is really critical, more so than ever at this time for the city, that we are able to attract the best talent that we can given the critical issues and the important work and services that the bureaus and the bureau directors have to do in delivering services to our citizens. There are 14 local government jurisdictions now that offer employment contracts and agreements, and they range from Lake Oswego, Beaverton, Clackamas County, Tualatin, Newburgh, Troutdale, Tualatin Valley, Metro, Westland, Sherwood, Salem School District. And so this is not unique for public sector jurisdictions and public sector jurisdictions in which we are competing with. At this time, when we were actually getting ready to recruit after we received the resignation from the Parks Bureau Director, Commissioner Fish and I met, we had started to do some preliminary cold calls, and once again, we ran into that same situation of having candidates not be willing to apply because of what they felt was lack of security, even if they were performing well in their positions based on partially our form of government and how positions here are actually filled. At that time, I suggested to the commissioner that it's time to look to see what other government jurisdictions were doing and what we would need to do in order to be able to recruit top talent into the city. I'm going to leave it at that as far as background, and I'm going to turn it over to Anna to actually go over the ordinance.
Thank you. Anna Canwood, Assistant Director for the Bureau of Human Resources. The ordinance before you is an enabling ordinance on advice of the city attorney's office. Because the ordinance allows commissioners in charge to enter into an employment agreement with bureau directors, council authorization is needed to do that. It's considered a form of a contract. Without the approval by council for this, there really isn't a mechanism for entering into these type of agreements. The ordinance amends Human Resources Administrative Rule 8.04 on compensation and the city's targeted severance program to provide for an employment agreement for a term of 36 months for bureau directors appointed after July of 2011. The ordinance does not change the current at-will status of bureau directors, but does provide for a payment if a director is let go for at no cause, so not for performance-based reason. And I'll get to that in just a moment. The charter amendments in 2000 were the amendments that created bureau directors as at-will employees for the city. The reason for that change was actually not to make these appointments political appointments, but to remove the bureau directors' property rights to their job. The fact that they had a property right to their job meant that in any termination for cause or not for cause, the Civil Service Board was actually the final arbiter and the decision maker on that, not the commissioner in charge or the city council. It was the Civil Service Board. So that charter change removed the property right and hence the due process and appeal rights that bureau directors had prior to that change. And this did not impact the portion of the charter from 1980 that does give commissioners in charge the right to appoint bureau directors. That had been in the charter. At the time that was put in the charter, bureau directors actually were not at-will employees. At the time of hire, under this ordinance, the commissioner in charge would decide the severance amount, ranging from 6 months rather than the current floor of 2 months in our targeted severance program up to a maximum of 1 year, which is the year that the program currently has. The ordinance makes clear that if a bureau director is let go for cause, which the model agreement that we would be directed to provide defines a very broad definition. It includes misconduct, workplace violence, violations of the rules, insubordination, performance-based issues that cannot be improved through expectations and directives. So for a termination for cause under this ordinance and the change in the administrative rule, there would be no requirement for payment whatsoever. But it does protect a high-performing bureau director who is let go for no cause simply because of a change in commissioner, a desire for a new person in the job that is not based on their performance. And again, only for the initial 36-month period. At this point, I'd like to turn this back over to Commissioner Fish.
Thank you both. Mayor, if I could I just make my preliminary comments now that we've heard from two experts about the why. First, I want to just offer a perspective. As has been noted, I've been directly involved now in two national searches, two searches, and have, in the course of those searches, learned a lot about the strengths and weaknesses of our current system, particularly in the context of a desire which is often expressed in our community to get the best possible talent pool from the most diverse pool of candidates and looking for ultimately the best talent. So my approach to this is informed by the experience I've had over the last 6 months. And I believe that this change will put us in a position where we can effectively compete with other jurisdictions in Oregon and across the country to get the best talent. And I tell you, I've had a lot of people ask me these questions about, so let me understand something. You're running a search, but you may not be the person I answer to. Well, yes, that's our commission form of government. I serve at the pleasure of the mayor, and there could be a change at any time. Let me get this straight. You're asking me to sell my house, relocate, take this job. You may not be my boss, and a week from now I may have someone else who doesn't care for my politics and lets me go, and I've got no recourse. Well, again, that's our commission style form of government. That's a quirk in how we do things. So it has come up enough that I concluded that it's putting us at a competitive disadvantage in not having this in our system. And when I learned that many other jurisdictions have moved to having this system, it struck me it's become mainstream. So to help us with recruitment, I think this has merit. Because other jurisdictions are doing it, it puts us in a level playing field with folks we may be competing with. There's a couple other values I want to identify, though, and one is the balance which HR is trying to strike here. And that is the balance between accountability on the one hand and protecting the rights of both parties. And I want to be very clear, under this proposal, a non-performing bureau director does not get severance pay. Let me just say that again. Under this proposal, someone who does not perform, and that judgment is generally at the discretion of the commissioner in charge, does not get severance pay. Furthermore, this proposal will end a practice which has been done informally at council, which I think is bad policy, which is the practice of paying directors that are terminated for cause severance pay on their way out. Because these agreements state very clearly that if you're terminated for cause, you are no longer eligible for severance pay. Therefore, the fourth value to me is cost and its impact. And I believe that if we implement this change and do really smart and thoughtful hires, we'll actually reduce the cost, not increase the cost to the city. It does not change the existing flexibility that is built into our system in terms of having the director that meets the needs of the bureau. A non-performing director is subject to documentation about performance issues and ultimately termination for cause. So it does not handcuff the commissioner in charge. And finally, I think it brings some consistency to how we address these things that's long overdue. Because the reality is the severance pay that's been paid out over the years has typically been done at the end of the process on an ad hoc basis, without necessarily a consistent pattern. And I think this brings some consistency to it. So for all those reasons, and because it doesn't change the fundamental principle that people can be terminated for cause, for reasons related to performance or non-performance, I've concluded that this will help us get the best possible talent without putting unreasonable restrictions on commissioners in charge. It's a difficult issue to talk about. It's an easy issue to caricature. But ultimately, I think it's in the public benefit because I think it'll help us land the best possible talent. And ultimately, over time, I think it'll result in less tax dollars going out on severance payments.
Right.
So that's how I view the issue, if it's helpful for the discussion to follow.
Well, and just one clarification, this agreement would not apply to an interim director or, you know, a director that is appointed as an interim. It would only apply to directors as laid out in the city code, which would include the directors under the Office of Management and Finance.
And it's also, there's a time limitation that we're talking about.
And there's a time limitation.
The first 36 months. And I will just tell you that with a lot of people in America with their homes underwater, with a good job being an important commodity these days, when you're asking people to consider pulling up stakes, leaving a secure job, and coming to Oregon to take a job, the absence of any protection if you are subsequently terminated within that 36-month period for political reasons unrelated to your performance is, in fact, I can tell you, a deterrent for some quality people considering working for the City of Portland in this environment.
So the at-will political director, or I'm sorry, the at-will bureau directors include all the ones we normally think of, plus, did you just say all the directors in the Office of Management Finance?
So it would apply, well, for example, HR is under the Office of Management Finance, but it would apply to the HR director because that is a director laid out in city code. And so it would apply to the CFO or the CTO, the technology director. It would apply to the internal business services director. So it would apply to all bureau directors under city code. What it wouldn't apply is when you are appointing an interim director. And so before we replaced the park director, we had appointed an interim director in Sue Kill. It would not have applied in that. It does not apply in that situation.
So those people are all at will under the charter amendments of 2000, the charter amendment of 2000. Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes.
Okay. But to be clear, it applies to your position, but not to you because you worked for the
right.
city for more than 3 years.
Right. Well, it would not apply to me because I was hired as a director prior to 2001. And so with the charter change in 2000 that went into effect in 2001, which made bureau directors at will, any director that was on before that was grandfathered in.
But even if you were appointed after that more than 3 years ago,
it would not apply
to you
yes.
because you would have worked.
Correct. We would not go back and pick up current directors or anyone that was hired prior to July 1 of 2011.
And Anna, you said that under this new ordinance, a bureau director terminated with cause, there would be no requirement for a severance package.
That's correct, yes.
So does no requirement equal... Not allowed?
Well, it's not allowed while they're under the employment agreement for that 36 months, yes.
Okay.
Because that's the terms of their hire that both parties understand at the time of hire.
And will these employment agreements be public records?
Yes. Yes.
And they should be a boilerplate agreement because there's no amendments allowed. They're not renewable.
Correct. Part of the way we've crafted this is that we really do need to have consistency. If we start opting in, opting out, changing the terms of the agreement, that becomes a very slippery slope, and it opens the city up to risk because then you have to make determinations of, you know, why this person and not this person, why 3 years here and 1 year here or 6 months here. That opens the city up to discrimination complaints and suits and liability. So
the only blank would be the salary.
The only blank would be the salary. And, you know, things that you're able to negotiate now with the director, which is things like their salary, you know, vacation time. But other than that, the agreement would look identical for every employee and that we're hiring and that you would enter into.
What is the dispute resolution process if a person that is hired under this provision has less than 3 years, is discharged by the commissioner in charge, and the commissioner in charge says that he or she has cause, but the director doesn't believe that is the case? Is there a dispute resolution process to adjudicate whether or not the director was discharged with cause or without?
There's no process built in. The model agreement does state that there's a requirement for advance notice and then allowing the director to discuss with the commissioner in charge, you know, their disagreement with that, and then the ultimate decision and the HR director, and the ultimate decision is made by the commissioner in charge in consultation with the HR director. And we have that in the model agreement to be sure that basically have the expert advice and assisting you to make that final decision.
If I could also address that point, because it doesn't provide specifically, let's say, for arbitration of the dispute, it means that the traditional recourse would be to bring an action against the city.
Right.
But technically, I'm talking out loud. Tell me if I'm wrong. Technically, if there was a dispute, it would always be within the purview of the city through the advice of the city attorney as to whether we would choose alternative dispute resolution to resolve that dispute. It just doesn't currently specify that there's a mandatory arbitration or mediation. So you'd bring your claim, but the city would exercise its discretion about how it wanted to adjudicate any claim.
Yeah, the goal is not to change the at-will status. And therefore, if you are moving to remove someone for cause, you're sitting down with the HR director and preparing, that rationale and getting advice on that rationale. And once the employee receives your rationale, they can request a meeting with you and the HR director give input and ask any questions and get clarification. If for some reason there is something that is not, that we could not, that we feel it wasn't for cause in there, then that's when the HR director would be sitting with you and saying, you know, we really don't have a cause for action, you know, an action of cause here. And so that's how that would work.
And currently we have the option of offering a severance package when the question of cause is questionable in order to avoid those lawsuits, and we have the flexibility to make the severance package from 2 months up rather than 6 months up. Is that correct?
Currently, that is currently not what our targeted severance program was really designed to do, even though we have used it that way. It has been inconsistent. I would say that right now we've had directors that we've removed for cause that I've advised some of you at the time that we shouldn't be doing a targeted severance, in which we have. This really takes that subjectivity out of that process, and I think asks for more consistency.
And why is it retroactive, since all the folks we've hired recently have been local people?
It doesn't really. I mean, what we're talking about here is our ability to attract and retain or recruit qualified candidates, whether they're local, national, or regional. And what I can tell you is that even with some of our local candidates and internal candidates, people have stopped and said, "I don't really know if I want to apply for these positions." When we hired our last police chief, this was a question that he had and that he stopped to consider. And I had to have a couple of meetings with him to try to move him forward. The same thing with our current CFO. And whether you are coming from across the nation, Commissioner, or you're coming from down the street or from another employer locally, you're leaving job security.
But you're not. And within the city of Point Lafayette, excuse me for interrupting, but if we have somebody who's at will, who's not a bureau director, who chooses to step up to being a bureau director, there's now going to be more security for the person who's making $150,000 plus a year than for the one the level lower down. That doesn't seem congruent.
Well, having just recently been involved in exactly that circumstance, I can tell you that is not the case, that the hire that I made from a civil service classification to an at-will position took some pause and some time to consider whether or not to do that, given he had just sold one house and it was buying another house, given that he has a growing family on the way, and it was a fundamental issue for him to leave, albeit a lower-paying job, for a higher paying job, one that had absolutely no security and one that absolutely could turn on whoever was the next person in charge. And so I'm very sympathetic to that argument.
That's throughout the system. Anybody who's going from a union job to a non-classified job, if it's not a bureau director, they become at will.
That's not true.
No, that is not accurate, Commissioner. We have very few. In 2007, with the 2007 charter change, we did make some additional positions in the city at will that deal with policy creation, but that's very few positions. And so most of the positions that were, you know, even internally, people aren't necessarily coming from represented positions. They may be coming from a non-rep position that actually has civil service protection because we have very few at-will positions
in the
city.
Which is the circumstance I'm describing exactly. He was not in a union position. He was in
a classified,
non-represented position.
But this would apply to the police chief?
Yes, the police chief is an at-will position.
And so the commissioner in charge of the police bureau would not be able to make a change without paying a severance package, because I would think it might be difficult to prove cause in a position like that.
I would wager that our public safety positions, such as police, BOAC, fire, are actually easier to prove cause. Those positions are very straightforward, and so we've never really had a problem in being able to look at that position and determine, you know, cause.
And, which is, I might add, exactly the circumstance I found myself in when I had the Bureau of Emergency Communications, and we did not pay a severance package, and we had cause to make a change.
And at a bureau director level, part of a definition of cause is an inability to carry forward the mission and direction of the commissioner in charge. So it is somewhat different expectations than people below that level.
And I think I think we should acknowledge that in crafting this proposal and having in-depth conversations with everybody up here, you in fact took a lot of the feedback you had and revised it. And this was not something I drafted or any member of the council drafted. It was a consensus document, and it led to the 36-month term and the what I would call as a former employment lawyer, a very broad and generous description of cause. This is not a cause clause that is narrowly tailored. It's designed to give as much flexibility as possible. Again, balancing some issues here and some basic fairness for someone who's giving up a job, a home, and job protection for a job for which they can be terminated solely for political reasons unrelated to their performance. And that, let's be clear. Within the first 36 months, that's what we're addressing here. If we do smart hires and we follow our procedures and we no longer pay departing bureau directors who are terminated for cause severance pay, I actually think over time this will save taxpayer money.
So I have an additional concern over the small bureaus, that if there was a six-month severance in one of my bureaus that has four people, I would have to leave that director position open for 6 months because I don't have the capacity to pay that amount of severance pay. There's no provision here to have that money come from somewhere else other than the Bureau's budget?
The money does come from the Bureau's budget. I would say even with small bureaus, you know, our ability to manage the timing of our hires and how long it really normally would take us to do an executive recruitment, your ability or the situation of having a short turnaround is actually quite slim.
You wouldn't be able to appoint an interim director because you wouldn't have the budget in the bureau. You'd be using the director's salary to pay the severance.
That's one choice.
Well, I can tell you my experience. We've had plenty of experience in this council where a bureau director is recruited to another position or leaves voluntarily, and someone becomes acting, and they are normally someone who is in the chain of command, who is put up for an interim period of time, and then placed there. My guess is that on something like this, nothing precludes a commissioner from asking for a supplemental appropriation if it becomes a budget issue.
Right. And generally, when we look at how we budget for salary, how we use, you know, COLA set aside, you know, for your personnel cost in the end, I think that your ability to, if you managed to have a candidate that was right there or that you wanted to do an interim, I think the city has the ability to absorb that within how we budget for personnel and how we do COLA set aside and make in requesting that appropriation at the time in our budget. So, I think the flexibility is there.
I will just tell you, in 9 years being here, I have been involved in a number of terminations of either directors or at-will employees, and I have never offered a severance package, ever. So the only circumstance I can envision in the example Commissioner Fritz gave is paying a severance package to somebody who there was no cause to fire.
Right.
Whether this was in existence or not, I wouldn't pay it. Not because of some philosophical reason, but when somebody doesn't live up to the standards that are minimum standards that we expect of at-will employees, I believe that it's my responsibility, as believe me, it's the most unpleasant responsibility I have to directly deal with that and replace employee. And even in circumstances where there were some protections, we have never paid a severance package because we had the basis for which to terminate the employee. So if anybody finds themselves in a circumstance paying a severance to somebody under this provision, I frankly would be very concerned that we were somehow without justification terminating somebody just because you didn't like how they combed their hair or whether they have a different political registration than you would be the only case under which I'd see this provision even being used.
And that is the point. If even in a small bureau, the Commissioner Leonard is right, the only time that you would pay the severance is if you were in removing the person not for cause. And so if you're removing the person for cause, Commissioner, even in a small bureau, you wouldn't run into the problem because there would be no severance if it's for cause. If you're removing the person for a reason other than that, then that's when you may, you know, be in the situation that you just proposed.
Under this ordinance, and let's say a new director is terminated without cause, how is it determined the severance period of 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, 9 months, up to 12 months? Who decides that?
That would be negotiated as part of the initial employment agreement where the commissioner in charge would make that decision where they want to go with the floor of 6 months up to a year of salary based on, you know, I'm sure there would be negotiation between the commissioner and the potential hire in terms of that amount.
So that would be negotiated the person actually, that would be part of the contract.
That would be part of the contract. So if you were hiring me, you know, commissioner, you would sit down and I would negotiate my salary. I would negotiate my, you know, vacation. At that time, I would also negotiate what the severance would be, and you would be working with the HR director to determine, you know, whether or not that's a reasonable amount and our criteria of getting there and why, you know, you would, if it would be six months or a year or 9 months, but that would be done on the front end.
Right.
And so if you chose to remove the person for a reason other than cause, then you know already what the severance payout would be.
But isn't that always going to end up being 1 year then under this scenario?
Not necessarily.
New hire for a bureau director, I'm going to say, yeah, I want the year, and the commissioner in charge is obviously wants me there, and so it's going to be a year, isn't it?
Well, not necessarily.
I can tell you, Dan, having gone through this recently, people are free to pitch, but we don't have to hit. I mean, in any negotiation, someone is free to propose all kinds of things. There's practices, I understand, in this city where people get additional management leave, additional vacations. It's all done at the discretion of a commissioner in charge. Each of us gets to set the standard that we're going to use and be clear with people and enforce it. this particular proposal.
Yeah, my point is, if you've got somebody you really want to hire, the difference between 6 months and a year to that commissioner in charge is really inconsequential versus I want this person here, so therefore.
You commissioner, yes, you would have the option of saying, hey, I really want Yvonne and I want it to be a year, or I really want Anna, I'll use her, and I really want it to be a year. You're going to be sitting down and you're going to be discussing that with the HR director, and I'm going to be looking at this and determining whether or not that's the right amount given what it is that we're trying to do. And I may be advising you that, you know, in that particular circumstance that is not what we need to do. And, and it's a negotiation like any negotiations. And so I don't necessarily, when we went through the park director recruitment, certainly our candidates negotiated for a salary that in the end we came in lower at, and I'm doing that with the commissioner. And so it is not always, it's seldom at the top of the range or the top of whatever we're negotiating, is my experience.
So do you have ultimate approval of the employment contract?
You have.
In terms of compliance with this ordinance?
Well, you are the one that would be entering into the contract, and in the end, you will be the one that is signing the contract. You are doing that with the advice of my office.
But again, my earlier questions about the contract should have just two blanks now, I guess, the severance period, the salary, and maybe vacation time, three
right.
blanks. So if for some reason a contract gets negotiated that has more than three blanks in it, who calls us to carpet on that?
Well,
that's inconsistent with this ordinance.
The intent of the ordinance is that the Bureau of Human Resources provides a model contract, and that's the contract that should be used, and only has, as you've put it, those basically three blanks in it. So it does not envision that a commissioner in charge could negotiate something different than that.
And what if it does?
Well, but under the ordinance, you don't have the authority to negotiate anything differently than that without us having to come back and change the ordinance. Right now, under our administrative rules, Commissioner, you could not just appoint someone at top of range. Once you get above the mid-range, then it takes the approval of the HR director. And so there are stop gaps. There are, some checks and balances.
I understand
in there.
That part. I'm just saying there. What about any miscellaneous provision that somehow comes up in a negotiation that is decided to be put into the employment contract?
Let's be clear, Dan, that currently could be done without any oversight by counsel. You're talking about the current practice that has gone on during your entire tenure. If someone tries to do that, what we're trying to do is actually curb some of the inconsistencies that have occurred over a period of time when people could do basically what they wanted and create a standard. I think the answer is HR sits down and negotiates it. If you have a thought for how we can put an additional level of protection to make sure that each of us who supports this honors the ordinance that we're supporting, we're open to that. I don't think the problem is preventing us from following what we're doing. This is new territory and actually establishing consistent across the board rules.
I think the other thing, Commissioner, that spells out exactly what we're discussing.
Commissioner, is that the city attorney's office is also signing this to form. And so if you're actually putting something in the contract that deviates from the ordinance and the actual contract that we're providing with those three blanks, then when the city attorney's office is, if it's not meeting that form, then the city attorney is not signing to form.
Well, could we put something like that in this ordinance now that we're having a second reading that just spells out there's no other parameters other than the three we've talked that are eligible to be included in this contract? I mean, you can think about it for a week. I guess we need to do it now, right, because it's first reading.
Right. I get what your hypothetical is. I don't see how that can happen. We're going to provide you with the contract. We're going to review it and negotiate with you, with the potential employee that you're trying to hire, and then the city attorney is signing to form. I would say If you want to have another check and balance there, since the HR director is negotiating this with you, then we could add to the contract that is the it takes the signature of the commissioner in charge and the HR director, and then therefore you get that consistency because there is.
I'll move that amendment.
I think that's a friendly amendment.
Okay. And so we will add that the approval to be the commissioner in charge and the HR director, and then that way you
need to do that today, though.
So yeah, but I just moved it.
Just so that we can get it done. It's a little more than a friendly amendment, she's going to say.
I moved it.
Okay. Moved and seconded, and the motion is that it requires the sign-off of both the commissioner in charge and the HR director.
Yes.
Any additional discussion? Carla, would you please call the vote on the motion?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
This entire package, I think, is well-intended, but I can't support it, so I'm going to vote no on the amendment.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Well, as the person who authored the 2000 charter amendment to make bureau directors at will, I've struggled with this issue of the employment contract, but I do believe it is something, it's a part of, it is a dynamic that, and it's been a while since I've recruited a new bureau director, but I think it is a dynamic that it is time for this city to address to be able to attract the best and the brightest. And I think this is, it's been through a lot of discussion amongst us and you, and I think with the three parameters of simply salary, vacation time, and the duration of severance, and nothing else is negotiable, no other amendments, I do believe this is a fair way to move forward. And I think this amendment we're just adding that guarantees that the scope of the contract only addresses what's in the ordinance is even a better safeguard. So I'm pleased to vote aye.
Adams.
Aye. Further discussion? All right, anyone wish to testify on this matter? Moves to a second reading next week. Can you please read the title and call the vote? Second reading, item number 1117.
Revised City Elections Code to update and clarify procedures for measures referred by the Charter Commission. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. We are adjourned for the week.
Thank you.